Tensions in Ukraine are spreading from the southern Crimean Peninsula to other parts of the country. Pro-Russian protesters have occupied parts of a government building in the eastern city of Donetsk and stormed the provincial council in the southern city of Odessa. Russia has denied reports that it's issued an ultimatum to Ukrainian forces in Crimea to surrender or face an attack. The U.S. says it will consider all options if Russian forces refuse to withdraw. Is there still room for a diplomatic solution, or is a military confrontation inevitable? How far are Moscow and the U.S. willing to go as the crisis unfolds? And will Ukraine survive the escalating crisis or lose its territorial integrity? I'm Homa Lesgi, and you're watching The Debate. Joining us now live from Los Angeles, is author and filmmaker Mr. Sasha Nezev, whose latest documentary film is called American Addict, and senior fellow with the Center for American Progress and a former assistant U.S. Secretary of Defense, Mr. Lawrence J. Korb, is with us live from Washington. Welcome, both of you, to this program, this edition of The Debate. I'll put my first question to our guest in Los Angeles, Mr. Nezev. Tensions in Ukraine are spreading to the southern Crimean Peninsula and now to the eastern parts of the country. Do you think Ukraine will preserve its territorial integrity, or will it break up into smaller countries, as a lot of people are now worried about?
Well, to begin with, I'd like to say that I feel incredibly sorry for the people of Ukraine. I believe they are the victims of a geopolitical game between the West and the East. And that being said, I'd like to give a brief history of the Crimean area before we get into put that within the framework of what's going on presently in Ukraine. Nikita Khrushchev in 1954 gave the Crimea to the Ukraine as sort of a symbolic gesture, though it has historically been Russian. You know, nearly 48% of the population there is Russian, they're Russian speaking, and they identify themselves as being Russian. That being said, this is of major strategic importance for the Russians, not only because of their pipeline that runs through Crimea that supplies 25% of Western Europe with natural gas, but also because of their naval base. I think it's there's so many layers to this, but you know, to begin with, I like to say that the pretext of being overthrowing of these so-called revolutions that are being fabricated by the West and being funded by the West should be really looked at carefully. I mean, this Orange Revolution that was conducted in 2005, that was fully supported by the United States State Department and the West, the UK was heavily involved. They immediately put in somebody by the name of Yulia Tymoshenko, who was convicted in 2011, I believe, of embezzling something like $200 million. She was an asset of the West, and she privatized over 300 industries for the Ukraine. She was in 2005 voted the, I believe, third most powerful woman by Forbes magazine. So there's several layers to this, but I'd like to just, you know, putting into context the fact that the United States is, you know, using this term, invasion, when we are actually funding the people involved and putting in unseating democratically elected officials. So we'll leave it at that.
Well, you raised a couple of issues there, but I'll start with one of them and put this next question to Mr. Korb in Washington. Mr. Korb, what do you think about the nature of what's being called the revolution in Ukraine? Because the ousted president, Viktor Yanukovych, said in Russia that an agreement was reached and that agreement was meant to resolve the crisis. And in that agreement, elections were going to be held and a new government would be set in. But he said immediately after that agreement was signed, people started to invade government buildings, started taking over government institutions, and there was complete chaos. And he was saying that the EU ministers who were present during that agreement and the opposition had betrayed him. So what do you think about the reasons behind the failure of that agreement and also the amount of support that the opposition got from the West? But it looks like we've got a technical problem there. We can't hear Mr. Korb with us. He is in Washington. We'll try to bring him back, though, just as soon as we can. We'll try to resolve that technical glitch. But I'll put this next question to our guest in Los Angeles, Mr. Nazev, before we get Mr. Korb back. Now, Mr. Nazev, you were saying there that you think the revolution cannot be called as such a genuine revolutionary movement because you were suggesting there that there's been a lot of interference involved. But let's look at the question of Russia here. Why has Russia in this situation taken a military approach? How valid do you find the concerns that this military approach is threatening the territorial integrity of Ukraine?
Well, this is very, this is vital for Russia. They, in essence, they have to react. They cannot, if they do not react, Russia as a power could be finished. I mean, the Ukraine joining NATO and enveloping Russia is exactly what Zbigniew Brzezinski wrote about in his book, The Grand Chessboard. He talked about Eurasia, conquering Eurasia. So Russia has no choice. I mean, if they let go of the Crimea, they're done. They're not going to give Crimea up. They just can't. They can't afford it militarily. They can't afford it economically. The pipeline that runs through Crimea up through Western Europe is responsible for 25% of the gas outlet for Western Europe. It's vital economically and it's vital militarily. So Russia is not going to give it up. I think it's insanity on the part of our administration to even suggest that they would. And I fear an escalation as the result of that. China has openly come out today and say that they are in agreement with Russia. So where is that leading us to? The grand chessboard, as Brzezinski called it, are we looking towards an Eastern-Western clash? And as a result, how many civilians are going to suffer?
Well, hopefully Mr. Korb is back with us now and his audio problem has been resolved. Mr. Korb, the question that we raised earlier, I'd like you to answer that question first before we move on.
Well, I think, the issue was right. There was an agreement that was brokered by the European countries and they were going to have an election within a year. But the Ukrainian people were not happy with the president, and they did not like the agreement, and so they protested. Then he left the country, and now we have an interim government that's going to be there until we can have elections. But this was the Ukrainian people, particularly in the western part of the country, were not happy with the agreement.
Well, that's the question, isn't it? While those who do support the current government in Ukraine or Kiev say that the people didn't want the president to remain in the country, the president himself and others say, well, that agreement was about, a transfer of power and was going to settle this crisis without things getting out of control. So some people are asking that couldn't we say that the EU or Washington is just stepping outside of its normal red lines? Because they're asking, what was the German foreign minister, for instance, doing in the streets of Kiev during the protests? What was the John McCain doing there, Victoria Nuland doing there? What was the agenda that they were pursuing? And couldn't this be described as interference, too much involvement?
Do you want me to answer
that? I think what they were saying...
That question to Mr. Korb.
...was that... Okay. I think what people were saying, like the German foreign minister, that Mr. Yanukovych was so corrupt he didn't even... have the right to stay any longer. And so he left, and then we found out the luxurious lifestyle that he had been living. And Senator McCain was not there. Senator McCain is not part of the government. He's just a senator. And I think they were speaking out against the obvious corruption of Mr. Yanukovych. But this was a spontaneous uprising. It had nothing to do. Nobody in the West was pushing it. In fact, the West, particularly the Europeans, would have wanted to have this stability until you could have an election.